Good morning. Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make our community tick. Well, it's an election year here, people, and in addition to people running for president, we will have people running for Congress to represent us in the 3rd Congressional District. U.S. Rep. Rosa DeLauro has been our congresswoman since 1990's election. And in our studio today, we have a gentleman who is taking her on from the other side of the aisle, Michael Massey, New Haven born and bred, is seeking the Republican nomination. He's one of two candidates so far for the 3rd Congressional District. He said he's running to represent New Haven, says he has a lot of new ideas, and he also wants to see a shift in the Republican Party. Michael Massey, thanks so much for coming to the studio today, and it's a pleasure to be chatting with you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I've known you over the years as the co-proprietor with Kenya of the corner store, Black Corner Store.
It's Kenya.
Kenya, I'm sorry.
Okay, everybody get it wrong.
You know, Kenya, and you're the Black Corner Store across from Troop School at Platt and Edgewood Ave. And now you're making a move here for Congress. So tell me, why are you running for Congress?
It's time that we start representing ourselves. These Democrat policies, they've been getting worse and worse and ruining our neighborhoods. We have to come up with our own solutions. These older Democrats, it's time for them to go. They haven't been in New Haven for a very long time. They don't know our solutions. We got to start creating our own role models. Kids need to look up to us. I want kids that see me to say they could be the next congressman, next senator. Like Rosa DeLauro, she don't inspire our children. But how could she? She's a little long in the tooth, and she's been in Washington most of my life.
And Michael, you talked about the Republican Party specifically. I looked at your policies. You are definitely a Republican. You know, you got conservative views and also new views. You know, you question the status quo. Have you been a Republican your whole life? Like, why Republican, not independent?
I've been apolitical. The first time I ever voted was for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, most of us don't vote. 60% of people in New Haven don't vote.
And was that 2016 or 2020 that you voted?
2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what changed that year? Like, why did you not vote before that? And what made you vote in 2020 for Donald Trump?
Like everybody else, you feel like policies ain't gonna change, and no matter if you vote one way or the other, things aren't gonna change for you. Like when you live in New Haven your entire life, you don't see anything good. You don't have people running that you know or that you know gonna want the best for you. So a lot of us just tend not to vote, or we act like, or we think that it has no relevance to our life.
But something changed in 2020. You had a reason you voted.
Donald Trump.
And what was the reason? Tell me about that.
I like his policies. I like that he's not all buttoned up. He sound and talk the way we do. Mm-hmm. I've been seeing Donald Trump on all of our shows for my whole life. I've seen him do interviews with Black people that I'd be skeptical to do interviews about. So when I hear the media keep talking about how racist he is, I'm like, man, if he racist, y'all definitely racist. It's he did a lot of good things for Black people. I've been in jail. I've actually been in jail when he was elected. I've witnessed the First Step Act. I've seen people walking out of jail.
Did you benefit from the First Step Act or
no? I might as well have, because it was emotional for me. I've seen people walking out of jail talking about, I love Donald Trump. Like people that, I mean, they were in jail for way too long for not enough of people give him credit for setting a lot of black people free. And it was emotional for me. It was emotional for a lot of people. But when you listen to the media, and that's all we get to listen to, we don't really know politics like that. And so I started doing my own homework. Like, the media lies, they lie so much. Like this whole bloodbath thing they going through, talking about right now, and
right,
people calling them out for
he
it.
He was talking about the economy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, people calling them out for it, and I'm glad that people starting to do their own research. Like, the media got us voting Democrat for no reason, knowing that our lives have been under Democrat this whole time, and our city ain't no better.
Mm-hmm. What were you in prison for?
Robbery, drugs. I've I've done a lot in this city. It took me a long time to change my life, because like when you don't see nothing better, you do with the things that's around you. Like the first rule of life is to adapt to your environment, and it took me a long time to understand that the things that we idolize is destructive to us.
Well, can you think of a moment that was a pivot for you, Michael? A lot of people talk about the moment when something inspires them to pursue a different life.
I'm in jail, and in jail, like they have a black TV, they have a white TV. Like it's
I mean, the inmates sit different places to watch.
No, they have. I mean, this is the white TV. This is the black TV. This is the Spanish TV. This is what they tell you when you go to jail. Like it's so segregated, and it's always this. There was this old black dude I used to play chess with that sit over there and watch Fox News, and it was weird to me. So I'll go to talk to him. Like I'm like, why you always sitting over here with these white racist people? Blah. This is when I was total badass. Excuse my language, but
it's okay.
So I asked him. And he was like, well, Trump about to talk. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, well, we about to watch speech over here. He was like, yeah, but I can't watch CNN. They're going to spin everything he say. He was like, matter of fact, come take a seat with me. So I watched Donald Trump's speech. And then he asked me, well, what'd you think about it? I was like, yeah, he wants to do a lot of good things. It seemed like he cared about the country, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, go over there and watch CNN. They're going to say it was racist. It was sexist. It was this. It was that. It was... I mean, everything he said, I would obviously see it in, and they said exactly that, like he had a crystal ball or something. I started like paying attention to Donald Trump and watching his speeches myself without the narrative that the media put on it. And I became a fan. I read his book, and I just started like feeling myself moving more and more over to the conservative side. I just dedicated my life to this, and I set a plan because of Donald Trump that I was gonna come home, I was gonna write a couple books, I was gonna get a store so I can be more involved with my people, and I was gonna run for Congress. And 2024 was my date.
All right, we're talking about that with Michael Massey. He's looking for the Republican nomination for Congress from represent New Haven, the city where he's grown up and lived his whole life, more than four decades. And he's talking to us on Dateline New Haven. What prison was that?
I couldn't even tell you. This was actually a federal prison, so you get moved around a lot. You see a lot. You meet a lot of the people.
How long did you do?
10 years, 11 years. It was a long journey.
When did you get out?
2018.
And you decided, but something happened that you went straight.
I told you. I started paying attention to Donald Trump and stopped listening to the liberals spin all the time. Mm-hmm. And I figured I was going to be running for Congress one day, because our cities is messed up, and Democrats, they've been in control of our cities for so long, they feel like they don't hold no responsibility. Like, well, mm-hmm. that's because y'all just bad people. Like, nah, like you are a leader. You're supposed to inspire people to be better. Like our kids don't even know who you are. And a lot of our congressmen and senators, like you don't come by. And these cities drive the vote. This is the biggest voting blocks, and they take advantage of our vote. I'm tired of people saying, well, we never get nothing for our vote. Well, you keep voting for the same people, for the same party, and you ain't running. And I was kind of skeptical when I came home. I was actually trying to get other people to run that think like I do. Like we have to start being our own leaders. Like it's especially for this Congress seat, you just got to be from this area. You got to be. I mean, this is actually a 25-year-old job. You only the term is 2 years. For us to let somebody sit in there for 33 years, knowing our cities are a disaster, our schools are a disaster. 20% of kids reading at grade level. For us to keep voting for you at the same time, like. You're not moving us forward at all. You're just getting rich, and you're helping out people that vote for you and donate to your campaign. Like I'm being outspent by too much. We can't beat them that way, but we have the votes. And when I start doing the math on everything, like if people want to stand up, there's no way she could stop us. No matter how much money she put out, no matter how many people sent her money, she couldn't beat me with if the Republicans are on my side and my people are on my side. Our numbers are overwhelming.
So, Mike Massey, you had some very specific ideas for your campaign. I found them interesting. They're not the ones you read every day because you don't hear many candidates talk about electronic benefit transfers, EBT. Yeah. So you're talking about like food stamps and welfare, right? And they say you can use a debit card. And this is something you know about, I think, because you run a corner store and your customers use EBT. And it tells you what you can spend it on and what you can't. And at least according to your website, you said that you want to get rid of restrictions on what that money can be used for, because otherwise you say it forces people to sell their EBT for 20 cents on the dollar so they could buy what they want.
If 50 cents on the dollar.
I'm sorry, 50 cents. If a person needs to buy toilet paper, who are we to say no? Tell me a little about that. How'd you come up with that idea and how would it work?
Like I figure everybody in New Haven knows about EBT. It's become a staple in our community. And for you to put restrictions on it, especially in this economy, like sometimes it's cheaper to go to McDonald's than to go to shopping for food. And for us to keep...
Can you use EBT at McDonald's?
Of course not.
Oh, you can't?
You can't buy... You can't use EBT for no hot food. And it's
Or even
it's ridiculous.
The stuff you make? Because I know you make hot food at the corner store.
Yeah, no, you can't. If I'm making fried chicken at the corner store, you can't buy it. And it's...
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, people really like that chicken.
I know. I don't like saying no to people.
That's a good rep.
But at the same time, I wanted my EBT to get taken. But these are situations and solutions that people like Rosa DeLauro just wouldn't understand.
Okay, so here, let me tell you a story. Could I push back on you a little?
Please.
Because I think you got a good point. I think most people would agree that government puts too many rules on things and they don't understand how people actually live. So I'm actually not disagreeing with your point. But I want to challenge you on a point.
Please.
So we know the reason some, and I'm not saying this is everybody, but I wrote about a case of another corner store, obviously not yours, not a thing you would ever do. Mm-hmm. There was a person who ran a corner store, and one way he was getting good prices was he got all the people who were addicted to drugs, or as many as he could, his neighbor addicted to cocaine and heroin, and so that they could use the EBT for drugs, they sold them, and it was 50 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. And then he would bring a whole big stash of those to Sam's Club to buy food for his store so that he can pay half of what he would otherwise pay. How do you prevent that from happening? And again, we're not saying most people are drug addicts, most people, you know, but how do you prevent that from happening?
I get what you're saying. However, putting restrictions on it didn't stop him. It don't stop it at all.
Right, so what would you do about that?
I would let people spend their money on whatever they want to spend their money on.
Including drugs?
Of course not. You can't sell drugs at a corner store.
But that's how he did it. He gave them the 50 cents on the dollar to get the drugs. But you would let people sell it for 50 cents on the dollar to get the cash?
No, what I'm trying to say is they shouldn't have to sell their food stamps for 50 cents on the dollar. They should be able to buy whatever they want from a store that you swipe. You should be able to buy toilet paper.
So are you saying that there should be a restriction that you have to buy something with it? You can't sell it for cash?
Well, no. It's EBT. Like I don't believe you.
But that's what they did. Fact, that's what I'm doing. How do you stop that?
I'm not even saying that. Hold on, let me finish.
I'm not disagreeing with your position.
I'm just saying. I'm not even saying that you shouldn't be able to go to the ATM and get cash out. Why not? Like, I know that EBT, because I have a store, EBT is just cash for me. Why can't it just be cash for them? Like, people got things that they want to do with their money. If you're giving them this money anyways,
So you can't use it at the ATM?
Unless you got EBT cash. But why just make it EBT food if people are going to sell it anyways? Like, you're just restricting their money.
So you're saying that's one way to get around the problem, is if they could get the cash for a dollar on a dollar, then they want to sell it for 50 cents on the dollar.
Exactly.
But what about people who do use it for drugs? Again, we're not saying it's most people, but there are people who are addicted to drugs and it's used for that. Or do we say that it's a small enough number?
Restricting it doesn't stop that. I mean, you just told me a story about how people are doing it. It doesn't stop it at all.
I agree. Should we try to stop it?
How?
But that's something Republicans are very concerned about.
What I'm trying to say is, yeah, how do you stop it? A person going to sell it for 50 cents, you can't. Just let them, let people do what they want with their money. If you're going to give it to them anyways, let them buy what they have to buy. Like, you can't say just because somebody's going to do something bad with it, you got to punish everybody else.
Right. I see what you're saying. Do you realize, and that's cool, you're not saying you do everything Republicans says, everything a Democrat says. The Republicans' big opposition to EBT transfers is fraud. They magnify the few people who do fraud and say, and so do Democrats, and say, like, so you're saying let people do what they want, why punish everybody else, right?
If you're going to give them the money anyways, let them spend it with for what they wanted to. Like, if I was in my store, if you was to buy, like I said, some toilet paper, find me at my store, take my EBT when I know how much this person needed this, whatever it is, some shampoo, I mean, some dishwashing liquid. If EBT has become such a staple in our community that we got to stop restricting people.
Are you saying people know better how to spend their money than the government does?
Of course they do. And I don't see why Republicans will fight this. When push comes to shove, this will make businesses do better.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's just don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just like a lot of our politicians that we hired, they haven't seen what we've seen. And we have to start being our own leaders, our own role models.
You're saying based on your lived experience.
Exactly. We have our own solutions.
Mm-hmm. And then you talk about abortion. Yeah, interesting thing, because a lot of people talking about how do we talk about abortion so that it's not just one side votes for one group and one side votes for another.
Exactly.
Your idea was baby bonuses. You say give $5,000 for women over 18 and $10,000 for married couples for every baby. This gives an incentive for children to wait to have children until they're adults, until they're 18, and increases the likelihood of men becoming fathers instead of baby daddies. So you're saying a compromise would be to help women instead of demonizing. 80% of women say that if they would have had a decent care package, they would have chosen to keep their child, and that the most reliable way to enter upper middle class is to own a home. So is that a one-time $10,000 for a married couple and $5,000 for a single woman if they have a kid?
For that child.
So it's a baby bonus.
If they have another child, I need them to have another baby bonus. I mean, this is not people that's making... For rich people, mm-hmm. But
and you know, what do you think about the state's baby bonus plan that they just started, where they put it invested, you get it when the baby gets it when they're 18, to use however they want when it's got interest, so it could be like their college bond, their buy a house.
I'm not opposed to that, but for just right different. Now, but mm-hmm. for right now, these women are killing their babies, and Republicans complaining about it, but you're not trying to help them financially to have their children, and. We have to change that. I actually got this from listening to a speech that Donald Trump was talking about it. So it's definitely plausible, and the leader of my party wants to do it. Like, we need to start injecting more money into our neighborhoods, and our mothers and our fathers. We're raising the next generation of Americans. We can't just keep leaving these people poor. I mean, fighting over crumbs, we need to inject as much money into these neighborhoods as possible, especially when they're doing the biggest job that Americans can do, and that's raising our children.
How do you feel about legal abortion? Would you do a 16-week ban? Would you let it be legal? Would you have Roe made into law and make it legal?
I'm not sure about a 16-week ban. I know I'm not cool with, and just like every woman I spoke to, I'm not cool with a woman getting an abortion at 9 months.
But nobody,
I don't care how you feel about it. Like, no, I mean,
nobody's for that. But what about?
And that's my point. Like, I don't know about. I don't know about. Yes, I'm banning 9 months, 8 months. But other than that, like, I'm gonna let the doctors and these women, these fathers, make their own decision. It's just that at least. Then it's not going to be a financial decision. Like, we need to try our best to start having these women have these kids. Like,
so
you don't tell her how many Barack Obamas we lost, how many Martin Luther Kings we lost, how many Jay-Z's, and it's financial. These Republicans, I think they're shooting themselves in their foot by trying to ban things without giving them an opportunity for anything else.
That's interesting. So is it fair to say you'd allow more should be legal except for the third trimester?
Like I said, I'm not a woman. I've never had an abortion. I know that there's a number that most women will be comfortable with, and I'll let them come up with that number.
Harry points out, and he's accurate, that it's also Democrats who don't tell you their limits on abortion. I think
exactly.
That's a very fair point. So it's not a Democrat-Republican thing. I'm just wondering where everyone's trying to thread this needle.
I can't put that limit up there. We're gonna let these women and these doctors and let people make their own decisions on what limit it is. I really love that it went back to the states. We gonna let these states make and I think we need to do more surveys.
Some people want to ban the pills or going to another state to have an abortion.
All right. Well, I disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I believe that these states should make their own decisions. People in Connecticut think a lot different than people in Texas.
But should someone from Texas be allowed to go to Connecticut to get an abortion if they want?
Of course. Yeah. If they can get in their car, they should be able to, mm-hmm. to get there. If a person from Connecticut wants to fly them out, then, I mean, that's fine. But I can't tell Texas what to do.
You're saying let people do what they want.
Let people do what
reason.
They do.
Yeah.
Within reason.
And Mike Massey is here running for Congress and telling us all about it on Dateline New Haven and WNHH FM 103.5, live streamed at WNHH.org. Prison labor you talk about. You don't hear candidates for public office talk about prison labor either. I mean, you definitely have a different set of life experiences from running a corner store to having grown up in a city to having been behind bars. That definitely leads to a different set of proposals, which is, for me as a journalist, very interesting to talk about. You talked about prison labor, and you said that prisons should be rehabilitating more than punishment. This country's focused on punishment, not rehab, and that's true. The trend in the last bunch of decades has been forgetting the rehab.
Yes,
you want to allow private companies to employ inmates to work while importing financial literary classes to help them. Creating a prison workforce will be voluntary. Doing the math at $5 an hour, a person come home after 5 years, $50,000. This works to keep them in the working spirit.
It keeps them in the working spirit, and they come home. They got a little bit of money in their pocket. They could do some things with it, especially if they took classes. And I know people that have never had $10,000 in their life. And that's just the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And our politicians, we don't know these type of people, even though these cities drive the vote. Like, if we all vote, is nobody can stop us, like either Republican side or Democrat side. Like, if Republicans support me, and they are overwhelmingly, there's no way a Democrat can stop me. Same thing, if I was to run on the Democrat side, and if my people are supporting me, there's no way a Republican could stop me. And that's the thing, like,
but, you know,
we take advantage
of
black
these, vote is not the majority.
It's not the majority. However, if you add that to the, right now in this third district.
If you add black votes to Republican votes, then
Republicans
you have
enough. Get, exactly.
Yeah.
If same thing. Shifts, same thing. That what they're doing on the Democrat side. It's just we've been there for 50 years, and our city's been in being terrorized for 50 years, and we won't even change. I'm not saying bring a Republican in that we don't know, but there's enough conservative black people that you'd be like, well, I'm gonna vote for you. I'm not gonna just bring a campaign for somebody else. You need to run.
So since you said that about conservative black people, there's been a lot of discussion, as you know, about why is it that black votes have increased, not just for Donald Trump, but for the Republican Party, and so have Hispanic votes at an even bigger rate. And one of the theories I think that I find the most interesting is not when white people tell you you should be voting one way because it's in your interest, but one analysis I find interesting is that, you know, the largest group of votes for Democrats' presidential election is black women and then black men.
Mm-hmm.
And the analysis is that trend's older. It's people who did their voting in the context of the civil rights movement. So first black votes were overwhelmingly Republican because of Lincoln freeing the slaves 160 years ago. And then when things shifted in the 60s and 70s, the civil rights movement, black votes went overwhelmingly Democrats who voted for civil rights legislation. The argument made now is that people, that all that time there were the black vote, the average black person, there's no one person who's average of any group.
Mm-hmm.
But the average black Hispanic person was much more conservative than Democrats on certain issues like abortion, on economics.
And they still are.
Right. And that they were more liberal than other voters on civil rights legislation is that we've moved into another era where people who didn't have their formative years in the civil rights movement are now having those other issues come to the fore.
Exactly.
That's one analysis. What's your analysis?
I mean, I think you said it perfectly. Like, we're not slaves. I don't know that nobody has been a slave. Like, every time Joe Biden says something like, they're trying to put you back in slavery, I'm like, I wish they try. Like, do we look scared? Every time Joe Biden is with some black people, he starts talking about white supremacy coming to get you. I'm like, they better hurry up. I mean, like, we, especially in these urban cities, like, we ain't punks. Like, if you think you're scaring us into voting Democrat, we're starting to see through that.
Like,
you
got to
have better policies than the next person. We're not just voting because you say white supremacy. I'm not trying to hear that no more.
And there's another theory, which I found very interesting. It's more for Hispanic than black votes, because I don't know what theories, right? I just mean these guys, right?
Yeah.
One is that every group, when you're more oppressed and trying to get into the system, you vote more as a block.
Yeah.
But then when you become assimilated in society, you're human beings. So there's no such thing as the Irish vote anymore. The Irish vote used to be overwhelmingly Democrat. They got assimilated in the country. They were discriminated against much less. They were Americans. The Irish was part of their identity forever, but it wasn't politically one group trying to get equal rights. And the idea is that, well, so many different kinds of Hispanics and black voters, countries you come from and all that kind of stuff, but that as groups become more a part of America, like you said, not worried the slave ships are coming back and all that kind of stuff, so right when we've passed, that they're just like other human beings, and that it kind of doesn't make sense to talk about the black vote, the Hispanic vote, or the Irish vote, or the Jewish vote, because people are people, and some people are more conservative than others, some are more liberal than others. So that's a little different theory, and it's more for the Hispanic than the black vote, because say blacks are more discriminated against still in America, but that, and that's more like, how do we stop being discriminated? You just have different views on that.
I believe that, especially on a Democrat side, they understood how to work our leaders. When I say that, I mean...
Well, King's father was Republican, and King became...
What I mean is, for Hollywood, is overwhelmingly Democrat. So they get, especially when you're this broke, we love Jay-Z, we love LeBron James, and when we're not so into politics, so when our leaders, people that we look up to, say vote this way, we do that. Instead of thinking about, his life is not like my life. Like, we have different experiences. I'm super broke. This is not, they're telling me to vote because of racism, and racism is not my issue at this point. My issue is that we're poor. So when people like Donald Trump saying like, well, maybe they need baby bonuses, we still be like, ah, but humbug, because our leaders are telling us we need to vote against you because you're racist. Like, and it, when you start paying attention to that, you're like, man, that's kind of stupid. Like, a lot of things that you would vote for is opposed to what I'm voting for. Like, I need to vote to inject more money into my neighborhood. Like, why your wife is having an abortion is different than why us as a family is choosing to have an abortion. And since the media is overwhelmingly Democrat, Hollywood is overwhelmingly Democrat. All our people that people look up to are overwhelmingly Democrat. We just naturally take their ideas and be like, well, he said it, and we agree a little bit, and we're not even thinking about us because we're so poor. We got our own lives to go through. Like, we're working 2-3 jobs. We're not really watching politics or paying attention too much. Everything in my store done doubled under Joe Biden. I mean, it's ridiculous how people that's so poor are voting for these policies when, I don't want to go too much on the tear, but Biden, he came in and made life terrible. I was doing fine before he got here. I am so broke right now. I could say that for most people that I speak to every day that want me to run, and they don't want me to campaign for a typical Republican. We might as well just have left a Democrat in there because they don't know us as well. And this is what I'm hearing every day when I talk to people in Hamden, Waterbury, New Haven. Like, these are the voting blocks that's going to get somebody elected, and we still just vote Democrat just because, you should have heard what LeBron James said. And I love LeBron James. I mean, I'm a Laker, but your politics can't be my politics.
We're talking about Michael Massey's politics because he's running for Congress for the Republican nomination in the 3rd Congressional District here on Dateline New Haven. You had another idea, defund illegal immigration. You say deporting problematic migrants is a must, but we shouldn't waste taxpayer money scouring the country for every non-citizen. We know who they are, and that we don't allow them to cost taxpayers money. We can't afford to take everyone. So if one family member is willing to foot their bill, cool, but not one rent set should be taken care of non-citizens. So I'm going to try to, what is the policy that you would change?
Well, I'm going to give you an example. I'm watching YouTube, and this old black dude, he's like, man, I've been sitting on this bench, sleeping here the last 3 months. These people come in here for, 5 days, and they walk up to the hotel across the street from me that I could never afford, and they're just in there sleeping good. They're being fed. They're eating, and I'm still here on this bench. There's enough, especially black people, or I'll say urban people that need help, that we just can't afford to just put somebody ahead of us. Well, we act like we can't take care of our own, but when people come in here that's not us, that haven't been paying taxes, or you're not even American, like we have no reason to put you ahead of us. We don't know you at all. It's like me buying clothes for a child that's not mine, but believe my kid with holes in his shoes. It's not right, and I believe that we got to pump the brakes on that. Over 10 million migrants came in here within the last 3 years. It's only 30-something million black people here.
So what would you do?
It's only 30-something million black people in America.
So how
10 million came over, 10 million non-us came over.
So you're saying that you would stop the flow or just not give them aid when they're here?
I would stop the flow, and I'm definitely not giving them aid while they're here until we can afford it. We're $30 trillion in debt. We are borrowing money from China to pay for them, and they're not even American before they even pay for us. It's ridiculous.
That's the one thing I want to ask you, because that issue comes up about putting American workers at a disadvantage or people. So if under your prison reform program, if they make $5 an hour, one criticism of prison labor by private companies is that you're helping those people get rich by having this captive group of workers who get paid less than the guy who's sitting on that bench who could have the job who didn't go to prison. So I guess one person might ask you, why should you pay under minimum wage to someone work in a prison who's in a prison because he broke the law, instead of paying someone who didn't break the law in New Haven money for the same job and have it be a wage they could live on?
I'm not opposed to rich people.
No, prison labor.
I heard you say.
Yeah.
I'm going to be rich one day. But at the same time, these people are in jail doing nothing.
No, I agree with that. You want to keep them rehabilitation money.
I heard what you said.
What about the $5 an hour? Okay.
Yeah, $5 an hour, you can come home with $50,000. When push comes to shove, we are shipping jobs out of this country.
But would it be would it be the jobs that people here are doing for $15 an hour?
No, of course it'll be jobs that's coming back from overseas, put back in this country. You shipping them out of this country because you could pay overseas workers less. Like, we have a workforce or a potential workforce right here that really needs that money. And of course, Democrats are going to be like, oh, what you're discriminating against them people. And this is what I really don't like, how Democrats feel like they got to make decisions for us. Like, you're not daddy. Like, if you survey the people in them jails, they'll say, let's do it.
But what about the person who's not in jail?
Doing time for no reason.
Okay, but what about the person who lives in New Hallville, has never broken the law? Why shouldn't that job go to a factory in New Hallville where he could make enough money to pay for his family?
That hasn't been happening, is what I'm saying. Like, these jobs are being shipped across seas to people to be paid less. Let's stop doing that. And these jobs that you're going to ship across seas, or jobs that can be brought back to America.
How do you make sure it's those jobs and not the jobs that are already here that they're going to want to save money on?
I mean, everything is... We're not gonna have answers for everything. But this policy will put a whole lot of money in the hands of these urban neighborhoods. Of course, not every job going to be done by people in jail. However, at the very least, it'll curb recidivism. Like people come home right now, strong, mad, 10 years of removed from anything they knew, and they angry and they broke, and you shove these people right back into our neighborhoods that we have to deal with. I don't care how, we're not going to have answers for everything that somebody's saying, well, we shouldn't do it because of this. We shouldn't do it because of this. I believe that it's a super plus, especially for these urban neighborhoods that move the vote.
All right. We're talking to Michael Massey, running for the Republican nomination for Congress. What kind of reactions are you getting from people?
Oh, my policies, people love my policies. It's just that they're skeptical of Republicans. And I'm like, listen, I'm not asking you to vote Republican. I'm asking you to vote me. I just happen to be a Republican. Like, if you love the policies, the Democrat is not daddy. Like, well, we got to stop acting like they're our benefactor or they're our best friend. You've never met your congressperson. Like, me, I mean, I'm coming to the cookout.
All right. And then tell me about the mechanics campaign. So there's Rafael Irizarry is also running. Do you know this guy?
I've met him a few times.
And has those two of you be going for nomination? What's it like so far competing for that?
I don't dislike him. I don't know him. Like, I'm from New Haven, and this is the biggest voting block. And I feel like we need to vote for ours for right now. And my policies is better. He's I'm not saying he's rich, but he ain't us.
Do you have any endorsements yet?
No, I'm actually I'm brand new, so I'm glad that you's having me up here.
I'm glad you're here too. Do you have staff hired, campaign organization, campaign manager?
I got a treasurer right now. Yeah, he's actually doing my website. It's taking way too long. It's been like 3 weeks. I'm upset about it.
That's not long.
I'm upset about it because people ready for this movement.
Well, I was
like,
able
it's urban Republican movement. Like, I think it's strong. It's this, we're Republicans. However, like, I wanted to keep this concentrated on us. Like, this is our urban community. Like, you know what I mean, we black, we Puerto Rican, we out here.
And how would people get involved in your campaign, Michael?
Right now you can go to my Facebook, but like I said, you can go to Massey for Congress, or you can go to Urban Republican Movement.
Is that something you came up with, or is there such a thing called that?
No, my wife came up with it.
All right, so you came up with the word. Are you also like, how do you feel about the guy in North Carolina, Mr. Robinson, running? Is that sort of the vein you're in, the guy running for governor there? Senate, I'm sorry.
I'm not too apprised of that right now. For right now, I'm concentrating on this third district. I'm not going to try to be all over the place.
I salute you for running. The more people running, the better city we have.
Damn right.
All right, Michael Massey, thanks so much. Good luck with the store.
Appreciate you.
And thanks to Harry Droz, the best station manager in the business. And we're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience.
God bless America. God bless New Haven, Connecticut.
We're going to take out the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free. From their band CD, A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us all day and all night long at WNHH New Haven's home for community radio.